Hello, my name is Brian Ovechelsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we're joined by Day Lee and Lucas Morgan, shareholders with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. They are here today to discuss ongoing developments regarding pharmacy benefit manager reform on the state level and how these instances may impact federal PBM reform down the line. To start,
why is Colorado's deranking model, which is mandating flat, fixed PBM fees instead of a percentage-based compensation, considered a mechanism to remove the PBM's incentive to promote higher priced medications?
Well, there are a couple of things that I could talk about on that. PBMs, especially on the branded medications, they receive rebates from the manufacturers in exchange of having the manufacturer branded products on their formulary. So PBMs, you know, whenever there's a generic drug comes out, they don't add it to the formulary right away because they receive rebate payments on the branded drugs. So in a way, because PBM is in the middle of the adjudication system, they can try to push high branded products, highly reimbursable products to their advantage. And the other thing is PBMs on the specialty generics, which are highly reimbursable, a lot of times they mandate those drugs to be filled at their own or affiliated pharmacies. And those three PBMs that we all know, CVS Caremark, Express Scripts, and OptumRx, they have their own pharmacies, whether it be retail level, mail order level, a level, or specialty level. So those can also be routed through or funneled through their own pharmacies. So Colorado's model can make sense. I don't know how it's going to play out on the operational side, but it's a good start in order to reduce the drug spend that are right now being solely managed and then managed by the PBMs.
I think another point that I would add to what Day said, and I agree with everything that Day said, is that when you talk about, I always live by sometimes less is more, sometimes the solution to problems is like the easier answer or the easier approach. Flat fees, I think, fall more in line with like the more traditional PBM model that we always expected. If you go back 20, 25 years ago, is that they were really serving more of an administrative function. And what tends to align more with an administrative function is set flat fees that are predictable, easy to understand. You know what you're getting, you know what you're not getting, as opposed to percentage-based fees. It goes back to, I think, that notion of transparency. And that's one of the big things that you see a lot of people say is missing from the PBM equation right now, a lack of transparency. Currently, there's so much opaque structure to the PBM system that it allows for manipulation of the financial transactions that take effect or take place between plan sponsors and pharmacies. So having a percentage-based structure just gives a lot more opportunity for manipulation, whereas flat fees can be a lot easier to understand and more predictable.
And speaking of the manipulation, PBMs negotiate rebates off of wholesale acquisition costs with manufacturers. But PBMs, when they pay independent pharmacies, they use average wholesale price. So percentage off of that. So the pricing mechanism doesn't line up, okay? And then PBMs, they because they're vertically integrated, they can pay possibly, more than likely, higher reimbursement rate to their own pharmacies versus independent pharmacies. And the contracts that they push out to the independent pharmacies in reality are not negotiable. It's just one-way contract, take it or leave it, because only three PBMs control 80% of the American prescriptions.
And then that gradual, like, from 20 years to like what's happening now and what could be different in the next 10, 20 years. So kind of going to bounce around to some of these ways that states are kind of looking at PBM practices. I want to talk about rebate pass-throughs. There's PBMs that are coming up, right, that are kind of focusing on that pass-through model. It's not really common of like the big three, right? And Utah's law, they have a law that requires health insurers to ensure PBM rebates are passed through to the consumer or used to reduce premiums and increase benefits. How does this measure legally protect the enrollee or the beneficiary at the point of sale from paying a cost share and non-rebate at list price for the drug?
Pass-through will eventually lead to reduction in drug spend, reduction in premium, reduction in out-of-pocket cost for patients. However, PBMs are mandated by law to pass-through, according to Utah state law, mandated to pass-through 100% of the rebates that they receive, right? But PBMs, when I say PBM, the major top three PBM, CVS Caremark, OptumRx, Express Rebate. They have their own rebate aggregator. Okay. Rebate aggregators are not PBMs. So whatever the rebates that are being retained by those rebate aggregators and the fees paid by the manufacturers to the rebate aggregators off of the wholesale acquisition costs or rebatable costs are not being passed through. So the law, when they define PBM, it should also include those subcontractors or affiliates.
For pharmacy businesses, is that something that's like kind of known as far as like how the rebate aggregators function aside from the PBMs?
If we were talking like a couple of years ago, no, not no. Today, I think more plan sponsors and employers are being educated. These PBMs are exposed, but not enough. You know, we don't know how much is Zinc Associate, Zinc owned by CVS Caremark, or MSR owned by OptumRx, which is located in Ireland, Ascend Health owned by Express Scripts, located in Switzerland. You know, we don't know how much they're making. We don't even know how much rebates that they are collecting. There's a disconnect. There's a delink between the plan sponsor, whether it be self-funded employer or the state, with the adopted level of the actual rebates that are being collected. There's a delink. And all those monies that are not being passed on to the client sponsors ultimately should have been passed on to the client sponsor to reduce the drug spend, premium, out-of-pocket cost.
So obviously more practices within PBMs that people are definitely trying to keep an eye on.
Of course.
And I would just add to what Dave said. I think it just goes back to, again, that fundamental lack of transparency. It's just when you think you're starting to get a sense of what's happening, all of a sudden a new entity pops up. And why was that entity created? To just become a different layer of complexity where it's like, well, we can't keep the money here, so we can shift it over here. But again, it goes back to that idea of transparency and circling back to some of the other topics. Like, it just reminds me, like, for the longest time, spread pricing was something we were really trying to get our arms around. And it seemed like we finally got our arms around what exactly is spread pricing, how is it effectuated in the contracts that dictate these various relationships. And just when we seem to have gotten that under control and understand it, now rebates really becomes an issue. And now we're trying to catch up with that.
Very, very fascinating it, from my perspective, just kind of how all that unravels. Obviously, pharmacies kind of have to keep up, which is a challenge, I could presume. So kind of bouncing around a little bit more, want to talk about Arkansas's law. Obviously, there's been some ongoing developments with it and PBM's ability to own pharmacies. You've kind of mentioned some of the conflicts of interest in PBMs and their pharmacies. So what is the primary legal argument PBMs used in their immediate legal challenges to block this law from taking effect?
This one's been really interesting because Arkansas has been a champion of independent pharmacies going back many years. You know, Rutledge versus PCMA, which ultimately made its way up to the Supreme Court. And, you know, for many people, the shocking outcome was Arkansas actually was successful at the Supreme Court level. And the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the state of Arkansas and against PCMA on that. That evoked very different issues from a legal challenge standpoint. It was really ERISA and Medicare preemption, but what ultimately went to the Supreme Court was the ERISA challenge. In this case, the primary challenge is on the Commerce Clause and looking at unfair or discriminatory treatment of certain types of pharmacies, in this case, non-resident, out-of-state-based pharmacies owned by these large companies like CVS Health, Express Scripts, and UnitedHealth or OptumRx, and how they're being treated versus in-state pharmacies and independent pharmacies. And so currently, that law is essentially, I would say, is on pause while this legal challenge is mounted, but that's really the core argument is a violation of the Commerce Clause and how these pharmacies are being treated. And then the other piece there is there's also, I believe, a preemption argument under the TRICARE program. So that's what we're looking at right now.
These constant developments, it's like, oh, this great thing is happening, and then it kind of gets shot down, and then things have to happen some more. So kind of wanted to just bring this all together and just get your general thoughts on how all of this state-level reform or attempts to had state-level reform may impact future federal reform, or kind of like maybe talk about how state reform kind of impacts like what's going on at the federal level right now. That historically, not much has happened on the federal level. So kind of touch on that.
Well, I would say for starters, I think that independent pharmacies pharmacists, pharmacy owners, the list goes on, should feel very positive and optimistic. Now, I'm also not naive to the fact that, like, we've been sitting here with, like, years and years of challenges and constantly having our backs up against the wall. But regardless of what happens at the state level, whether legislation is enacted, not enacted, gets reformed, revised, there is an awareness about PBMs and exactly what it is they do, the challenges they create, the business practices they use, like never before. So I think at the state level, you kind of go back to, you know, federalism 101 and the idea that the states are really like petri dishes of experimentation or that kind of thing, to that the federal level can always look at, and in some cases, vice versa. But I have no doubt that federal legislators are looking at the states and really looking at what are we trying at the state level to rein in some of these business practices that are really causing trouble. You know, so if we look at the three main categories that they and I are often dealing in, we'll look at Medicare, Medicaid, and then private commercial plans. And they're kind of all have their own unique legal framework. So, you know, usually when we're talking about what's happening at the federal level, we're talking about Medicare. But I think those legislators are absolutely learning a lot from the laws that have succeeded in the state level, the laws that haven't succeeded, perhaps laws that have been enacted but really haven't had the teeth they need, laws that might have been put up but never enacted because of certain reasons. So I think it's really, at the state level, we're seeing momentum like never before.
And even Congress level, like FTC is still pushing for it. There are other legislators, like including Congressman Buddy Carter that we met at the NCPA, who's championing this legislation in favor of the independent pharmacies to achieve the ultimate transparency, or at least make the playing field levels.
Another thing I thought of is kind of you've gradually been hearing about pharmacists stepping up and getting in Congress, and that's very exciting for to have someone that has seen all these PBM issues and kind of beyond that, like expansion of scope and stuff like that, for someone to be on there and have that perspective is most likely very exciting for pharmacies and states and on the federal level.
Yeah. A couple other points real quick is that there is bipartisan support for this. We're seeing that at both the federal and state level. As we all know, that is unique. Another thing is, you know, Day and I have had the opportunity to consult with different legislators and lawmakers at different levels. One of the first questions we get asked, and this is really just to give a practical illustration or example of how it works, is when we're interacting with someone at the federal level who's actively involved in trying to draft legislation, they'll say, can you tell us what's working at the state level? Can you give us some concrete examples? And Day and I will literally sit down and we'll say, okay, here's an example of a state that has some laws that have really been successful in a litigation setting, for example. So what's an example of a law that's really critical? An any willing provider law. Some states have them, some states don't. They're game changers when it comes to litigation to challenge something like a pharmacy termination. So how do we enhance that at the federal level? Those are the real practical examples.
That's kind of all I had for you guys. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.